Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. It's November 9, 2011, and this is episode 307. Actually, this is going to be pretty much Chris Marquardt's Tips from the Top Floor, episode 524. Today, basically, I'm going to play you a 30-minute chat between Chris and I as we've teamed up to bring you two new Snow Monkey and Hokkaido Winter Wildlife Wonderland tours. I've recently asked Chris to run my German tour version of this tour, and we've also added a new tour before that, which both Chris and I will run together. The first tour with both Chris and I will be from January 23rd to February the 3rd, then the German tour will be from February the 6th to the 17th. My original tour is unchanged from February 13th to the 24th, and this has now reached the numbers required to make it happen, but there are a few spaces left, so there are plenty of options here. If you want to join us and one doesn't match your schedule, hopefully the other one will work for you. I will be releasing another podcast this week, so please forgive this shameless promotion today. And if you are already listening to Chris's podcast, Tip from the Top Floor, and you've already listened to this episode, just skip to something else right now. The rest of this is going to be a replay of that. So me and you can catch up again for the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast probably tomorrow. I'm hoping to walk you through Nix Software's Color Effects Pro 4. See you then.
Hey, this is Chris Marquardt. Just a very quick interruption of your regular Tips on the Top Floor feed. This is a bit unusual, but there's something that has come up that really is urgent, that needs your attention, and it's a workshop, and it's a very, very special workshop, and to just like 5-10 minutes give you a quick overview on what we're working with. I have the person who kind of brought that on to me here on the line, and that's Martin Bailey. Hi, Martin.
Hi, Chris. Nice to talk with you.
So you're not the first time on this show, so people will probably know you, but just in case they don't, why don't you just say a couple of words about yourself?
I'm, as you said, Martin Bailey. I've been podcasting partly thanks to Chris for for over 6 years as well.
I feel guilty now.
Well, it was 50% your fault and 50% Brooks Jensen's fault. I use the word fault in jest, of course, because it's been an amazing journey. So, I'm a photographer based in Tokyo, Japan, and been running the tours that we're going to talk about today. I've been running this for the next year will be my fifth year.
Wow.
It's a very popular and successful tour, and we figured that we'd give it a go with your help as well. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about this.
So initially, you called me or sent me an email, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago about this. And this is a tour, the tour that you've done is, okay, now I've got to get the title right. I've been kind of not getting it fully right in the newsletter, but officially it's the Snow Monkeys and Hokkaido Winter Wildlife Wonderland. That's the title
of it.
That's it.
Yeah.
So the tour is going to everyone probably has seen something about the world famous snow monkeys, and they are, where are they exactly?
They're in Nagano, which is northwest of Tokyo. It's we drive out there by bus. Takes about three and a half hours, mm-hmm. And then we spend 3 days there initially. You know, the first 3 days of the tour are basically, it's one full afternoon, and then one full day the following day, and then the morning after, and then we drive back to Tokyo and go off to Hokkaido. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the monkeys are amazing. They're, you know, like you say, people have probably seen them. They're the ones that figured out that if they jump into the hot springs that the people set up there for themselves initially, that they can keep warm through the cold winter months. Because these monkeys are actually the most northerly monkey species in the world. They normally live in much warmer climes. So they're pretty special in the first place. But then this particular group figured out that they can keep warm in the hot springs, and so they're just like hot tubbing and relaxing, and you know, it's pretty cool.
Snow on the fur on top on the head and stuff. Right. I mean, I've seen right. pictures you've taken. I've seen some video. There was actually a documentary here in on German TV about them just a couple of days ago. I think it might still be available online. By the way, the reason we're doing this here is that I think we did make this. We are teaming up to do this together.
Right.
I think this is the key about it. Martin Bailey and Chris Marquardt are teaming up. If you've followed anything of what I've done, you'll know that I've been doing the Himalayan workshops together with John Miller for the last 3 years. Now, in 2012, this is not going to take place. We are going to move it out for probably a year, so 2013, we will be looking into the Himalayan workshops again, and this freed up this chunk of time. So it's kind of a perfect fit when you pinged me, and
So
the snow monkeys.
I want to quickly just mention as well that there are three tours, and the last of the three tours is the one that I've been taking bookings for some time now. And just in case anyone's listening that's already booked on that, I did want to say as well that is totally unchanged. The 13th to 24th of February 2012 tour is unchanged. There's a few spaces left on that as well if the scheduling for the others doesn't work out for people. It's unchanged, just to let people know.
This has got to cause some confusion, I'm pretty sure about
that. Absolutely. Tell you what, let's go through the dates and just let people... The first tour is going to be with me and Chris, and this is from January the 23rd to February the 3rd, 2012. And then the important thing here as well is that I've also asked Chris if he can run a German-only tour, which I've had details on my site for a while as well, but I know that Chris is pushing this out in a much easier form to understand. But that's from February the 6th to the 17th.
Yes.
The last half of Chris's German tour actually overlaps with my my third tour. So there's three there, January 23rd to the 3rd of Feb 6th to 17th in German, and then the 13th to the 24th.
So this will be a tough choice. So we have three tours. The first tour will be the two of us together.
Yes.
I'm coming with you on that tour. First of all, to hold a workshop together with you, because if anyone remembers our talk that we had last on the show, I'm going to link to that in the show notes. I mentioned that we got to do something together, so that is the opportunity. And the second reason is to get me prepared, so I see the locations, I know the intricacies of getting around there. We have a tour operator, so I'm not going to have to learn Japanese for that. Which you speak very well, but I will be able to say arigato, and that's kind of it right now. I have to brush it up slightly. And then the second tour, that is the one that, or almost in parallel, you and I will do separate tours.
Yes.
And it's the same tour with a bit of an overlap. So
yeah.
If anyone wants the full blast of you and me together, that would be the first tour, end of January. To February the 3rd, and then the other tours. We'll link that. There will be newsletters out. The information will be out. But the reason we're doing this and the reason it's so urgent is, as you can see, it is very, very short notice. We are looking at not too much time to sign up and get ready. I'm seeing a lot of interest in the German tour. I've been talking about that and pushing out information about that for a week now. And not even a full week yet, but it's already gathered some participation. And one of the things I think we have to make clear is that those tours are very likely to happen, but the tour that I do, well, your tour, February 13th to 24th, is definitely going to happen.
We've hit the minimum numbers for that one.
Yes, but the other two tours, we're still racking up enough people. So we're probably looking at something at the lower end of the maximum participation, so we'll probably hit the minimum participation, which will make for very small and easy to handle and good integrating groups. So, but we still have to hit those numbers. So we are really, this is basically the chance for me. That's the chance of a lifetime thing. When I got this offer, I jumped at it immediately because it's pretty cool.
It's an amazing tour. I mean, we probably should, you know, we've spoken a little bit about the snow monkeys.
Yes, let's continue in the details.
Yeah, so once we get back from Nagano, we spend a night at the airport, in the Haneda airport, and then we fly to Hokkaido early on the fourth morning, and we're actually out on the snow in front of the Red Crown cranes for the following 2 days there. And we're out on the snow from 9:30, 10 a.m. that morning. So we don't lose much time getting up there. But the Red Crown cranes are amazing. Or, you know, there are links to all of these images. I mean, anybody that already knows me has probably seen had these photos pushed down their throats for a while anyway. But the Red Crown cranes are just beautiful.
Aren't they the national bird of Japan?
I believe they are. Yeah, I think that they should be the national, what is it, the international bird of the world. They should just represent human race.
There are only like a few hundred left of them, I guess. That's what I heard I saw this documentary on German TV. That's they were also talking about the Red Crown cranes and that they at one point I think were even believed to be extinct.
After the Second World War and Japan started to spread and try to sort of build itself as a country, they encroached in a lot of the land that the marshland that the birds live in and roost in. And I think they were down to like 50.
Oh, wow.
Literally they were very, very scarce. But then there was a couple of people around the Kushiro area, which is where we'll be photographing them, that basically said, okay, these birds are too beautiful to let them die off. Let's save them. And what they did was they made sanctuaries for the birds and cordoned off areas of the marsh that could not be, you know, basically the birds were going to be allowed to breed and do what they do. And a bigger part of it as well is that they started to feed them, which is kind of goes against the grain for real traditional birders and things, but it's basically brought these birds back from just 50 to a few hundred. I don't know the exact number. I think it's something like 500 or so. There's a fair number of these now, and there's actually, I mean, just in the last 5 years, I first went there to photograph them before my workshops and everything at I think it was 2005 or 2006. And just in this 5 years or so, you know, to date, the numbers have actually got very, very good. You know, there's a lot of the time, there's no chance that you won't see them. You know, I mean, you will certainly see a good number of these birds. And in fact, the numbers are getting so good that sometimes it's more difficult now to get a clear shot of just one or two, because there's so many in the places that we visit that sometimes you can't get a clear shot. But you know, that's sort of the look of the draw. You set up your long lens, hopefully have another telephoto that you can handhold, and just move around the enclosure, and you've pretty much got you'd have to have really, really bad luck and probably not be a brilliant photographer. We'll help with that, of course.
we have to say this is not just a tour. We are basically holding a workshop here. It's a wildlife photography workshop that will teach you to get the most out of your camera. This is a very difficult subject. We have to make that clear. So you want to be able to shoot in manual, to fully master that. Depth of field is going to be very important. We'll talk about focal lengths. There will be, obviously, I mean, the landscapes are breathtaking. So landscape and panorama photography. There will be some flying subject as well. So there's focus tracking and these kind of things that, I mean, we're basically going to use our cameras to their maximum abilities.
Absolutely, yeah. And so, yeah, the cranes themselves will actually fly in and out most of the day, and they glide in. They're a beautiful bird, like I say. So they're not as difficult to focus track as what we start to photograph after that. Because once we've finished with the cranes, after two and a half days probably, I kind of change it around depending on the weather, but probably 2.5 days photographing the cranes. But then before we move on, the cranes are fed with live fish at, I think it's 2 o'clock every day. And when that happens, you get white-tailed eagles and Stella's sea eagles come swooping in to steal the fish as well. And these things, I mean, Stella's sea eagles have got a wingspan of 2.2 meters, 2.2 to 2.4 meters. They're huge. And the white-tails are only a little bit less. And these guys come swooping in. And that is when you start to get your real, your practice with your focusing, because it's everything's so fast. But like I say, we'll be working with the group and giving advice on focusing on all of the various aspects. I mean, I generally prep everybody about what they're going to see well in advance of it happening. So it gives you the best chance to capture it, but it's still difficult. And, you're not guaranteed to nail every shot. I don't, but we're going to give you the best chance. And so...
And I think it's really important to note that that's one of the things, like, okay, what are we doing 2 days there for? But it's pretty obvious nature doesn't really stand still for you. So we will have enough time to really get those shots and to really play with a lot of different things. I think that's really important to note here.
Yeah. So what happened? I mean, initially this tour started out as a 5-day tour. And of course, the majority of people that are joining are coming in from overseas, and they don't want to come to Japan for 5 days. They want a longer experience. But also, we did find exactly that. You know, 1 day in each location is just not enough. You really need to work these subjects, and there are things that are, I mean, not just the birds. Obviously, they can do whatever they want, but the weather itself. We go to a bridge called Otowabashi on the second and third mornings in Hokkaido. And if it's minus 15 or below, Celsius or below, and there's got to be no wind, then we get a beautiful frost. We get hoarfrost on the trees and we get a beautiful mist on the river. And it's a scene that, I mean, I've been here a lot of times and it's happened I think twice where it's been really, really good for photography. So it's not forced to happen, but being there 2 days in a row gives you double the chances. And so, you know, the benefits are that you get double the chance to actually capture the beautiful things that happen only every so often. Plus, you don't have to uproot yourself every morning. And that's a big plus. I always carry out a survey when I've finished. And a lot of my participants said that they wanted to be able to spend more time in each hotel so that they didn't have to pack every day. And so there's all but one of the days we have two consecutive nights in each hotel. So that's another benefit of having the slightly longer tour.
And speaking of minus 15 and colder, Hokkaido tends to get very cold. Especially at some of the times that we will be up, which is a challenge in its own for me because I'm a night owl, but I think the jet lag is actually going to help with that.
Absolutely.
But the thing, just the temperatures, yeah, but I read on your website that hand and foot warmers are provided. Is that true?
Yes. Good. So obviously what you're going to need to do is have yourself some good warm, like probably ski pants or, If you have down pants and things, you know, they'll really help you to keep warm. You'll need some good boots. I buy Baffin boots, and they are rated, I think, from some are down to minus 40 and some down to minus 70. But what we do is, obviously, you'll need a couple of fleeces, a good down jacket or a big thick fleece and then a Gore-Tex jacket or something like that. But then... We will give you, basically, I just open a couple of boxes of chemical hand warmers and leave them on the front of the bus. So you can take those, put them into your pockets or, you know, keep them inside your gloves. And also I prepare foot warmers, and they're basically little pads, just like the same sort of chemical hand warmers, but you slide them into your boot. And so they'll stay warm the whole day. We take precautions to make sure that you don't get uncomfortable, because literally you're standing out in the in this cold the whole day. But the good thing is that the dawn shoots, and as it gets towards the end of the day, can get quite bitter. But the daytime itself is normally, you know, floating just a little bit below freezing. So if you've got the right clothing on, it doesn't feel uncomfortable at all. So, you know, it's, I mean, I often, during the day, I'll actually take off my outer jacket and I'll be walking around in just a thin fleece and then a larger, thicker fleece on top of that. So it's not as cold as you would think, but you do need to have the right gear to protect yourself.
And the other thing we have to mention is, because people who heard about the Himalayan treks that I did, this is not a trek, this is a tour. So we're not going to go out and sleep in tents and stuff. It's all in hotels, some of them right. in pretty luxurious as far as I've heard. And
yeah,
we are always near a bus, so it's not that we are going to go out and walk for hours to get to the destination. So we're trying to make this as comfortable as we can.
Right. So, yeah, as we sort of try to, I'm terrible for getting sidetracked, you know, I keep going off on these details of things. So as we go through the rest of the tour, I'll explain where we do have a little bit of a walk, but you're totally right, Chris. There's no trekking involved. The day, you know, after we have been shooting the cranes for those first couple and a half days, we go off to a lake called Kusharo Lake. And over there, there are a large number of hooper swans, and they're beautiful, beautiful setting. There's some, I think you grabbed for your newsletter, Chris, you grabbed a picture of a tree sort of bent over a lake.
Yep.
That's there, the beautiful setting. And we get a lot of opportunities to photograph the swans flying in and flying out and just lounging around, because what they do is they have, like the monkeys, similar to the monkeys, they have hot springs that run down into the lake. And basically these swans they fly in from Siberia for the winter because it's warmer than Siberia. But normally they would fly a few hundred kilometers further south. But because they have this hot spring that goes into the Kusharo Lake, the ice is frozen slightly and the water and the beach, the sandy beach there, is warm. So these guys decide that they'll stop there. They winter at Kusharo Lake. But there's a lot of great photo opportunities there. And then after a couple of days there, actually at the mornings while we're at Kusharo, we go and get some beautiful landscape photography in at Bihoro Pass. And this is one of the times where it's a 10-minute walk, but it's up a hill. So it can be a little bit strenuous, but so far even elderly participants that are not so strong on the feet have made it up there. So don't worry about it too much. You know, it's a little bit of a hike, but it's a beautiful view from up there, as long as we get a nice sunrise. And then we go on from there to Daus, which is a place on the Shiretoko Peninsula. And Shiretoko is basically the horn-shaped thing that sticks out the right side of the Hokkaido Island. If you look at a map of Japan, there's a big diamond-shaped island at the top. And on the right side there of that, there's a horn that sticks out. And this is actually a UNESCO Natural Heritage Site. It's been registered since, I think, 2002. And it's just a beautiful place. And the attraction there is, as I said earlier, they come in during the feeding of the cranes. We've got Stella's sea eagles and white-tailed eagles. And again, the reason we have 2 days here, and not just so that we don't have to uproot each other each day, but we actually have to have sea ice, the frozen ice flow that runs down to Hokkaido from Siberia, we have to have that there. And what it can be there one day and gone the next. And so again, giving ourselves two chances to actually get that sea ice is very important. But if it's there, basically what we do, again, this doesn't really wash with true birders sometimes, but we charter a boat and we go out with a couple of crates of fish and squid and stuff and throw it out on the ice. And so what happens then, because the eagles know that this happens, you'll get literally hundreds sometimes of Stellar Seagulls and White-tailed Eagles. And they're just, these things are huge. They're like B-52s just, you know, flying around the, I mean, I'm recording audio and I've got my arms out here flying. It's like, they're beautiful birds. And they're literally just fly around the boat. And again, it can be difficult to focus and get a really sharp shot of the eyes, but we work with the group and make sure that you get as good a chance as you can to capture that action. But these birds really are just totally amazing. If you like wildlife at all, and you wouldn't be coming on this trip if you didn't, then you'll be amazed when you see these birds. But we do that 2 days in a row, and as long as the sea ice is there and the weather is not too inclement, because if going out to sea, if it's a storm out there, we just can't go. And you know, to give you some statistics, that's happened once out of the 5 years, well, 4 years that we've actually completed tours there. That's happened one day where we couldn't go out due to bad weather. But with having 2 days, it's pretty much certain that we'll get out. If we don't, then the white-tailed eagles and Stellar Seagulls are perched in the trees around the town. So we don't get quite the same shots, but we can walk around the port town and, you know, basically get ourselves at least a few good shots, even if it doesn't all work out. And then we basically go around the other side of the peninsula. But when we do this, we stop for one night at a place called Odaito. And this is basically, we have a chance here of photographing a square sun. And it might sound a bit weird, but basically there's a phenomenon that happens with the totally, you know, really, really cold seawater, and then there's some sort of refraction that happens with a slither of land that's out to sea, and then the sun comes up, and basically if the conditions are right, you get the sun can look like a wine glass. It can be square. I've got at a different place, I've got some really good photos of this, but you know, the sun just goes crazy, and so it's one of those phenomena that doesn't happen totally regularly, but when it does, you've got photographs that nobody else in your neck of the world has got. And then basically we go around to the other side of the peninsula, and we have there towards the end, one of the big attractions here, literally, I mean, everybody's getting tired by this point. We've been on the road for 10, 11 days by this point, and we have a beautiful hotel. They're all good, but the last one, we have this really, really big, beautiful buffet, and the hotel is one of the main attractions of the last night there. But we also have a beautiful walk. This is the other time where we'll do a little bit of walking. We go out for a walk into the Shiritoko National Park. And there's a couple of options. There's two different tracks that you can walk on. One will take you down into the valley, and there are Ezo deer. Ezo is basically the old word for Hokkaido. But there are these large herds of Ezo deer. So that's a beautiful, you know, you have the stags there sometimes rutting, and, you know, there's various places that we can photograph the deer. Or you can walk across in through, there's not so much up and down, but you can walk into some of the woods and you'll get woodpeckers and various bird life as well. A little bit scarcer, so, you know, it's not always possible to get a decent photograph, but that's what we'll do on the last afternoon, and then the following morning before we fly back to Tokyo and finish the tour.
That sounds also exciting. I completely forgot the time. I promised everyone it would be a 5 to 10 minute update. It's turned into more like a 30 minute update now.
Sorry about that.
So no worries. It's very exciting. I'm very, very excited. If we can make this happen, hey, this is awesome. And just hear you talking about it, and your excitement about it. You have done this several times, and you obviously love it. So,
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. So again, the dates: January the 30th, the 23rd to the February the 3rd. That's the first tour with the two of us together. The second tour is held in German, so that is for a German-speaking audience. February the 6th to the 17th. And then the third tour that you are holding is February the 13th to the 24th. And if anyone wants to find out more, there is the website, your website, martinbaileyphotography.com, that has the information. There is my website, discoverthetopfloor.com, where you will find links to everything too. And I'm going to send out newsletters. So if you go there and sign up for a newsletter, you will get all this information plus more pretty soon. And we are going, well, originally we had a deadline set for the signups for, well, November the 8th, which is Tuesday, November the 8th, 2011. So when you and I talked and said we need to give this a little bit longer time, we decided to slide out the deadline by 1 week. So the official deadline for you to register... Oh, by the way, registration process, official deadline 15th of November, but the way the registration process works is that you are asked to pay a deposit, and then... a month before the actual trip, you are you're required to pay the balance. So that'll give you time to actually save up and make it work. But the deposit is due.
That's basically necessary to get to book your place.
Right. That's how you guarantee your place on the trek.
Yeah.
Trip, not trek.
So I did want to you briefly mentioned this earlier, Chris, as well, but I did want to just reiterate to the audience that the guide that is going to be with Chris and I is the same person that I say guide. I mean, I'm really the guide, but we have a representative from our tour operator that we work with on this, and she came with us last year. This winter, this February. And was amazing. She did a really, really good job. And basically, this person will be the same person that's with us, with me and Chris, for the first tour. And then when I am doing my tour, I'll get a new, fresh guide because I don't need her so much. But this guide will be with Chris for his tour. So don't worry about the logistics. All of that is taken care of. And she even knows all of the places that we've got to go. So we're not going to be asking Chris to read Japanese street signs and things like that.
I wouldn't be able to. I'm very happy that this is the way it's set up. This is what's going to make it work, because that means I can fully concentrate on the photography aspects of things and on the group. And I think that's what's really important to people too, not just the nature, but the full workshop, the experience meeting you and me. That's, I think, part of the whole thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. So don't worry, folks, that Chris isn't going to know his way around anything. He doesn't need to. It will be his second time once for the German one. And he'll already know. And I'll be on the end of the phone all the time as well.
Yes.
But yeah, it's there's nothing to worry about as far as logistics are concerned. It's going to go smooth as silk.
All right. So go to either Martin's website, Martin Bailey Photography, or to Discover the Top Floor, and you'll find information there. And yeah, this is now. Let's see how flexible you guys are, because this is really a very short notice thing. So, we're counting on you.
Chris, the best. There's a link. There's a tile on the top of martinbaileyphotography.com for my workshops. It says photo tours there, but if people go directly to mbpworkshops.com, that's got all of the information right there.
Wonderful. mbpworkshops.com or discoverthetopfloor.com, and let's make this happen.
Absolutely. I really am looking forward to it, Chris. I hope we can make it happen, because I've won.
Let's make this happen.
Absolutely. I really am looking forward to it, Chris. I hope we can make it happen, because I've wanted to show you my Japan for a long time. and I know that you've wanted to come here for a long time. So if we can make this happen, not only for the audience and for the participants, but I'm really looking forward to showing you the place, because it'll blow your mind.
I'm pretty sure, and I mean, people will notice, and if they have listened to us speak in the past, that there's a very good rapport between us. So this is as much a thing between two friends than a thing between two countries. So
absolutely
awesome. All right, so thanks everyone for listening in, and let's make this happen.
Absolutely. Tips from the top.
top floor, tips from the top, all right.